Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, November 9th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for what I like to call our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers joining us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat college football and the NFL with Brad. We'll talk college basketball, college football, and the NFL with Rolf here on today's show. If you like the content that you hear on Bang the Book Radio, and obviously you do since you're listening to it, head on over to BangTheBook.com where we have great content all the time, 24/7. You can check out all the game previews that we have, college football and NFL power ratings, free contests that you can sign up and try out, game previews, golf, NASCAR, UFC, everything that you could possibly want over there at the website. So please feel free to go and check that out. Also, our sportsbook reviews. If you're looking for a new sportsbook, if you're in the market to find one that suits your needs, you can check out that sportsbook review section and see what we have to say about a lot of the great outlets that are out there in the sports betting community. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTB and the number 25. You get a $25 free bet just for signing up, 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests join me here today. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday morning.
All right, well, we've been covering some different topics here with our handicappers throughout the week, and when I get a topic in my head, when I start talking about it here on the show, I like to crowdsource opinions, get as many of them as I possibly can. So we'll go ahead and get yours here today on the show, Brad. And one of the things that I like to refer to the month of November as in college football is kind of the appetizer. You know, it's like it's a little bit before the bowl season where you've got a different set of handicapping considerations. So let me ask you this. In terms of your power ratings here in the month of November with about 3 weeks left of the regular season, how much stock are you putting in them?
You know, not as much because me being a handicapper, you got to have some plays out there. And, you know, the difference being, you know, compared, you know, this time of year compared to the early start of the year, you know, on a card, maybe I would have at the start of the year 7 to 10 games where, you know, I could just go off of pure power ratings plays where the difference was, you know, a couple points compared to my power ratings compared to this time of year. Even though in the rotation you probably have 10 more games, teams aren't on buys and all that, and you're not having teams playing FCS opponents, I might have like 5 games a week. And a lot of times those games, you know, maybe there's a key injury that's not being fully grasped in the power rating later in the week, or maybe it's just a team that's getting pounded as a big favorite that kind of skews the line a little bit. A big favorite, what I mean by that is like by more than 4 touchdowns, where I, even though there's a difference of 3 points to the power rating, it's just not as much as, you know, a 3-point difference when you got a competitive point spread. So, no, I do not use the power ratings as much. But the one thing, and we're going to talk about it here, the advantage that you do have this time of year, obviously you got a lot of rivalry games. You got teams with bowl needs coming up. And that's where you can really take advantage of what, you know, the last couple weeks of the season, where sometimes you got questionable motivation for one team. And on the other side, you got a very motivated team on the other side.
Yeah, and of course, the biggest motivation here at this time of the year for a lot of these teams is getting bowl eligible. I mean, you have a select number of teams, probably 8 to 10 at most, that are going to have a shot at the college football playoff. But other teams are going to have a chance to go to the bowl games, play in the postseason, get some extra practices, which if you have a young head coach or a group of young players, you know, having those extra bowl practices is very, very significant for you. You know, and we can kind of look at it in the opposite context as well. We think about bowl motivation, getting to 6 wins being really important, and obviously it is. But look at what happened last night to Eastern Michigan. They fall 42-30 to Central Michigan, biggest loss of the year for the Eagles, and now they can't make it to a bowl. They went to a bowl game for the first time since 1987 last year. Now they can't go to one. So you kind of look at them as a team maybe on the flip side here where you can outright question their motivation. And that's something that may not be quantified in a set of power ratings.
No, and moving forward, it was a team that you thought, you know, would be up there for winning their last 3 games of the season to try to get back to bowl eligibility. Now, last night was more about turnovers, 5 of them for Eastern Michigan that really set them back. But I'm glad you bring them up because next week a great example of a team that's going to be motivated being Miami of Ohio, the team that the Eastern Michigan plays, who has to win out to get back to a bowl game at home for them. And Eastern Michigan, a young program, let's see how they handle expectations. Didn't necessarily handle them great coming off a bowl last year, but I think a lot of it had to do with close losses and a relatively tough schedule. So, I'm not throwing Chris Creighton and that program in the trash. I thought they might actually be just as good as last year, just the ball didn't bounce their way in a majority of the games, and they played a tougher schedule. But, man, I don't know. If that bubble burst last night and they don't feel like they have much to play for the rest of the season, then no question about it. A power rating is not going to grasp that, and it's going to be a very competitive point spread, I think, on the road in Miami, Ohio. Maybe Miami, Ohio favored slightly. But if they got questionable motivation – and Miami is very motivated. The Red Hawks will be a play, and I'll definitely be looking to lean with the Red Hawks next week when that game's played.
And what's funny is that typically I'm a numbers guy. I mean, I'm a big baseball fan, and baseball is almost exclusively about the numbers for me. And in football, you have situations where you can use the numbers, and you obviously want to incorporate that into your total package of a handicap. But quantifying a situation like that to the point spread, it really cannot be done accurately. It's basically what sort of value you personally want to put on it, what it means to you, because there is no right answer. And, you could say that there's no wrong answer, but obviously if you overcompensate for it, then it's probably not the right way to go about it. But, yeah, with a situation like Eastern Michigan, you run into this spot where whatever your power rating says is probably what the number is going to come out at or something thereabouts. And then you have to try and figure out, what it actually means to this team to go to a bowl game last year, to not be able to do it this year. So that is something that it can be a little bit uncomfortable for people. And it makes me wonder, Brad, now that we're this deep into the season and you have extracurricular considerations like this that don't show up in power ratings, do you find yourself waiting a little bit more throughout the week, or are you still jumping out at some of those early numbers to try and get line value?
I'm glad you brought this up because, I still try to pick off the ones around key. As far as many bets, do I make as many bets right now down at the win as far as the Vegas openers here compared to what I did weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? No. But what I do find myself is, jumping on opportunities, picking off, hooks around key numbers, specifically if I'm looking to lay 6.5 or, pick off plus 7.5. I'm doing a lot more of that. But also, and look, not everyone's able to do this, but if you're not fully sure what the motivation is going to be for a team, sometimes the great thing about this industry, it's evolved, and maybe the in-game live wagering is the way to go, where you can pretty much figure out if that team is motivated or not by the first couple of drives of the game. Now, you'll be paying a little bit of a premium there, but if there's anything questionable and you're not fully sure, that's the advantage that you have over a bookmaker. Number one, they got the advantage of you got to lay 110 to beat them. But the advantage that you have over them is you don't have to play. And sometimes if you're not fully sure what the motivation is going to be, your power rating is relatively close, then I would say wait until game day. Wait until the game's played, and you fully can see yourself a lot of time early on in that first quarter whether this team came to play or not. But as far as I go, a little bit less betting for me. It's more strategic betting around key numbers and trying to anticipate line moves. And the great thing about late in the year is you kind of got a feel for where the market's going to move on a lot of teams.
And it's really interesting because typically with my college football, I do very well early in the season because I've done a lot of preseason work. I've written preview content and done these preseason preview shows and that type of thing. In the middle of the year, I get some valleys. Things kind of there's sort of a reversal of fortunes there. And then late in the year, I think that I tend to pick things up and do a little bit better because, baseball is really truly the only sport where I handicap strictly based on the numbers. When it comes to the NBA and the NHL, I'm looking at a lot of situational factors. It's the same thing here late in the year for college football. And then obviously, of course, once we get into bowl season, and we'll talk about every bowl game here with our guests on the shows. But, I think it's a good spot for our listeners as well who – maybe don't do power ratings, maybe aren't as invested in the numbers as some people are, but you have so many other things here that you can handicap with to where you don't necessarily have to know the personnel. You don't necessarily have to know, how that team has played on a yards per play standpoint or whatever else. you know, you could just look at these handicaps as what they are. As, you know, take a situation like Old Dominion, for example. They play FIU this week. FIU's got a shot to go to a bowl game. They actually have bowl eligibility, you know, for the first time in a long time. And they're trying to set new standards for this program. Old Dominion went to its first bowl game last year. They were a 10-win team last year. They need to win out this year to get to a bowl game. But this is a team that if they lose on Saturday and they go to 3-7, the best they can do is 5-7. They're not going to a bowl game. They've been destroyed by injuries on both sides of the ball. They've got a good head coach in Bobby Wilder, but it's been a long year with a lot of guys dinged up. And all of a sudden, a team like Old Dominion, you can circle them and say, okay, I want to play against them. And it's different now at this time of the year. You really can't do that early on in the season.
No, you can't because, I mean, let's face it, teams aren't waving. Very few. Out of the 130 teams, maybe you see a couple that wave the white flag early on in the season, whether it be mid-October. You know, maybe it's they already got an interim coach and the season's over with. But one thing that does happen is those two or three teams, late November when it comes to the final couple weeks of the season, that grows to maybe 35, 40 teams that might be just playing out the season. And that's the advantage of, you know, handicapping late November. In addition to all the other sports that are going on, I think sometimes creates a softer market. And I'm glad you brought up how you do as a handicapper. I'm exactly the same way. I do well early on. I don't know what it is with me in the month of October. I'm just maybe overthinking things, but I'm not very good in October. But usually late November, I fully pounce on some of these unique opportunities where, you know, even though I'm a pure numbers guy to begin with, I'm also been following the game for the last 25, 30 years, and you're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. And I've seen in the past where, you know, the interest level just isn't there in the last couple weeks of the season. A lot of times the interest level is really there on the other side. And, again, the markets they get it to a certain extent, but they don't always compensate for that, which could be, you know, a 3-4 point type of factor in a particular game.
All right, well, let's look at some of these games here that we want to go a little bit more in-depth on, and let's go to Friday night. We'll talk about Washington and Stanford. Washington, a 6-point road favorite in Palo Alto, and you know, this is a big one for the Pac-12 because Washington is the only team at this point that can make it into the college football playoff. Everybody else has two losses, including USC, including Washington State. So right now it's Washington or bust because the only conference that's probably going to get a two-loss team in there ever would be the SEC. This is a huge game for Washington going out. It's a bit of a revenge game for Stanford as well. Now, for those, obviously nobody knows this, but we did wind up recording about 20 minutes of a previous segment here for today's show. Then we had an audio issue, the audio cut out, and then we had to start from scratch again. So, Brad, first of all, thank you for being patient there with that. But you did make a grab on Stanford early on in the week at a number that's no longer available.
Yeah, I did, and here's a great example of what I'm doing this time of year, particularly down there on Sunday at the Wynn at the Vegas openers for the upcoming week of college football. I saw a line, Stanford plus 7.5, and I'm like, well, I'll take the hook there. Even though my power rings has this game, you know, right around 6, maybe a little bit less, not a significant difference, but right through a key number. And I wanted to play on Stanford, particularly off a loss against Washington State. And why did I want to play Stanford off a loss? Especially when they were slightly favored. Well, they're 11-0 straight up, 11-0 against the spread after suffering an outright loss as a favorite dating back to the Harbaugh era. They're also extremely good as a home underdog. Hasn't been the case in the last 4 years because they haven't been a home underdog in 4 years. But, you know, take it back to, again, the Harbaugh era, 7-0 against the spread as a home dog. 6 outright upsets the last 3 times, all outright upsets over top 10 teams. It's been a tough season for them. Defensively, they're just not what they were 2-3 years ago. I thought you had a beautiful stat there with Sports Cheetah, the fact that they're giving up more yards per rush as far as yards per carry than they were giving up yards per play just a couple years ago. That's an incredible stat, but I had to play the Cardinal just by not only pure numbers at plus 7.5, but I love the trends that are in my favor, and I even think the situation's in my favor here. Even at the current plus 6 number, I still lean with the Cardinal, and on the flip side, the jury's still out on Washington. I mean, they played arguably the weakest schedule so far for a Power 5 team, them and Wisconsin. They haven't played a single team in the top 40 of my power ratings right now, and the highest-ranked team that they played was Arizona State, who's in my mid-40s. They lost the game outright. He's a double-digit favorite on the road. So, yes, they're number one in the country in total defense, and they've, you know, smashed some teams here as of late, but I still don't know how good Washington is. And the fact that I have, you know, some questions out there in mid-November, I had to take the Cardinal, and again, still lean with them at plus six.
And this circles back to a game I talked about on Wednesday's show with Brian Leonard, the Toledo-Ohio game. My number on that game was Ohio plus two. The number came down throughout the week, closed plus three, even as high as minus 125 on the juice at bookmaker. So nothing really moved towards my number. Didn't play Ohio. They win 38-10, of course. But the reason I didn't play Ohio is because, I mean, who have they played? They hadn't played anybody of Toledo's caliber, and then they come out and have a really big game in that spot. So now you walk into a situation with Washington and Stanford here. Stanford's played some very good teams in some tough environments. Washington has played virtually nobody. So it's tough when you get this late into the year here in Week 11 where we don't know about a team. But if you don't know about Washington and you got a pretty good handle on Stanford, I think you're on the right track here with the play that you made.
Yeah, again, as far as Stanford goes, you know, taking it, if you're concerned about what you've seen from them the last couple of weeks, you know, the Oregon State game, chalk it up. You don't have Bryce Love. Last week, you know, back-to-back road games against a good Washington State team, particularly Washington State's really good at home. I mean, it was played in 35-degree temperatures, flurries. You know, Bryce Love's ankle, in my opinion, looked like it tightened up after the long touchdown run early. Don't be as concerned. I mean, you definitely have to have some reservations about Stanford compared to past editions, but I still think that they're a legitimate top 25 team. And if that's the case, Washington hasn't played a legit top 25 team at all. And the fact that they're laying a touchdown on the road says Stanford clearly the play.
All right, well, let's move to Saturday here. Let's go to game 159, 160 in the rotation order. This one, TCU and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, pretty much a 6.5-point favorite across the board. Couple sevens at some of the more public shops, five dimes in Bovada. But the seven at five dimes coming with plus seven, minus 130 on the dogs. So that's effectively a 6.5 line. They're just playing a little bit of teaser protection and things of that sort there with that one. But you have this situation here where Oklahoma, coming off of a Bedlam rivalry game against Oklahoma State, won that game 62-52. They're taking on a TCU team that is one of two in the Big 12 that can actually play some defense. The other being Iowa State. Well, one of three, I guess. The other being Iowa State and then another being Texas. But for TCU here, I mean, look, their offense isn't particularly great. It's not particularly strong. But they do something that very few teams in this conference do, and they're getting 6.5 points to play it at a high level.
Yeah, and the defense. I got the not only am I getting about a touchdown here, but I have not only the better defense, but the much better defense. I mean, the Horned Frogs, incredibly. This is Big 12 action here. Last four conference games have allowed 7 points per game. Last week, they hand Tom Herman his first ATS loss in the underdog role in his coaching career. As long as Kenny Hill is protecting the football, you know, I can almost make a case that maybe TCU's a little bit better than Oklahoma, at least from what I've seen so far this year. And one thing I haven't heard anyone talk about, you know, looking at the marketplace this year is Bedlam has always been played the last game of the regular season. This year they move it up. Maybe there's anticipation that there's a rematch in the Big 12 title game. But one thing we can finally chart now is how do those two teams play after such a big rivalry game? And I got to want to, you know, me personally, I want to play particularly how that game played out last week, you know, shootout down to the wire. Both teams running up and down the field, a lot of plays. I want to play against both teams here. And, you know, particularly TCU having the much better defense in a better spot. And, oh, yeah, they're in their preferred underdog role on the road as a dog, 13-3 against the number. I like TCU a lot. You know, shame on me for not catching, you know, an early number, although it wasn't there at the win. It was 6.5 on Sunday. But I think clearly the right play. And the only thing preventing me from having, you know, top play of the week material on TCU here is I haven't had a good pulse on TCU. I backed them a few times. It's been their two, you know, subpar performance of the season. They get outplayed at home against West Virginia, even though they get a straight-up win. They don't cover. And then a couple weeks ago on the road at Iowa State, Kenny Hill has three turnovers, you know, his worst game of the entire season, and they get beat outright in that one. So the fact that I haven't had a good pulse on TCU prevents me from going all in, but I definitely think they're the right side here.
Well, and of course, too, you know, you talk about that odd situational spot coming off the Bedlam game, and that's something that Oklahoma doesn't do. You also have a situation of Lincoln Riley coming off of a really big win, and he's a first-year head coach. Now, you know, I know they came off of the Ohio State game and played very well, but that was against Tulane. The following week, they really struggled on the road at Baylor, and as we know, Baylor's not a very good team this year, and then lost to Iowa State. So you look at Oklahoma here, and you kind of wonder, you know, can Lincoln Riley get this team back in the mix, especially when he's at a coaching disadvantage, because Gary Patterson remains one of the most underrated coaches in the country. I know TCU was bad last year, but this year they're right back on track. They're right where they're supposed to be, and it's certainly a very interesting spot here for Oklahoma. Now, I will ask you this, Brad. Obviously, you're leaning towards the TCU side. As I mentioned, there's a couple of sevens out there, both of them at a little bit higher juice. Where do you think this number goes? I mean, is this going to be one of those pros versus Joes types of games where maybe the guys that wait a little bit with the influential money can catch a seven on game day?
Yeah, I think you'll be able to maybe catch a seven on game day. You know, looking at the betting splits, looks like, you know, Oklahoma's the preferred public side here. You know, I don't think it's overwhelming, and I definitely think the pro money is going to be on TCU. I would wait. I think there's a opportunity, maybe at some square shops here. And if you're listening in Vegas, you know, stations being there, you know, maybe the most square, they can maybe pick off a seven. But I don't see it moving. I think it closes right around this six, six and a half. If anything, it probably moves down. I do think TCU is the preferred side, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised on game day. You get a rogue seven out there at a public shop, but I don't know if it's going to last long, because we've seen it already. Those sevens out there are not going to last long unless they're juiced, like you mentioned, at five dimes being minus 130. I definitely don't see it going north of seven. It's not going right back through seven. I'll put it that way. I'm very confident in that.
All right, well, I know I didn't send this game over to you in our notes here before the show, but since we talked about the Bedlam rivalry, I do want to touch on this game here real quickly. Game 161-162. Between Oklahoma State and Iowa State. Oklahoma State, 6.5-point road chalk for this trip to Ames. There are a couple of sevens out there as well. But, you know, for Oklahoma State here, I mean, not only did they lose the rivalry game last week, but they lost their chances of hoping to do something more, because now they're a two-loss team. And you kind of wonder, I mean, Mike Gundy's a really good head coach, but you kind of wonder what the mindset is of this team here for this week. Meanwhile, you have this Iowa State team. Yeah, they're only 6-3. Yeah, they've lost a couple of games that they probably shouldn't have. But, man, are they dangerous in the role that they're in this week?
No question. And number one, for me, this is one of my favorites, you know, defensive home underdogs. You know, one of my favorite personal handicapping philosophies is to back them, because it's quite simple for me. You have the better defense. You don't give up many points. You're getting points. And you're at home. So this is one that usually shows up, especially the last three, 4 weeks of the season. And you talk about motivation. I'm worried. I think Oklahoma State's got questionable motivation off that big-time, you know, game against Oklahoma where they come up just short. They're driving. They're down three late. Don't get the job done. They got two losses in the national championship for them. Pretty much all done. And maybe even the Big 12 title chances all done for them. Now, Iowa State's also coming off a loss, but I got to be honest with you, I was very impressed with them. They didn't roll over and die last week where they could have. They were in a tough spot on the road in Morgantown after a couple of big wins. They're down 20-0, but kudos. The tip of the cap goes to that entire program and Matt Campbell. I mean, they fight right back tooth and nail in that game, only lose the game 20-16, shut down West Virginia in the second half. So with the better defense and the more reliable team as far as motivation, Cyclones are the pick for me.
I'm really glad you brought that point up, and this is something that I think people need to realize, and if people take anything away from these shows here, you know, I think that we have a lot of great bits of advice and a lot of things that can really help in the long term, and that's what I want people to take away. But not every loss is a bad loss. That is an extremely good loss for Iowa State last week. To fight back, yeah, they started slow. That wasn't a big surprise at all that they started slow. I honestly thought that West Virginia was going to cover that number comfortably last week, given the spot, given that Iowa State has expectations as a ranked team that they haven't had in many, many years. And to go out there and yeah, they gave up a lot of yardage, but you know, they played well in the second half. They fought back. Like you said, they showed a lot of tenacity, and that's important. That's something you can build on, because you know, Matt Campbell can look at his players and say, hey, guys, look, not only were we not supposed to win that game, we weren't supposed to be all that competitive in that game, and we were. And you know what we've done at home, so let's go back home and do it. And I think that's one of those losses where people just kind of gloss over it and bypass it. But I think it means a lot more when you actually take a deep dive into it than what it would suggest on the surface. So I'm glad you brought that point up, and I agree. Those are the games, honestly, that mean the most to me, is when you see a team in a horrible spot that still goes out there and plays really competitive and even gives themselves a chance. That means a lot and goes a long way in my book.
No, not all losses are created equal, and that's why it's very important to take a look at the box scores. I know a lot of people don't have time to do that, but it's one thing that I do every single game. Don't be a final score reader. A lot of times, you know, dive in there and see how the game played out. In that particular case, I don't know if there was, you know, maybe a loss that I came more impressed with the team than last week. And the markets were against them, blew right through three, and obviously they still didn't cover. But, man, that to me says growth in a program there. And it also, you know, projects forward for me that the fact that this season's not over for them, even though they got three losses, they're still fighting, scrapping, and they still have the same identity that they had and the chip on their shoulder and before they, you know, traveled to Norman, Oklahoma, and pulled off one of the biggest upsets of the year.
All right, so this next game here that we're going to talk about, it kind of has some significant implications, and that's nice to see because it's Notre Dame and Miami, game 165-166 on the board. Notre Dame, 3-point road favorites in South Florida. A big, big game for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, me being a more of a lifelong Notre Dame fan, you know, I'll be a little bit nervous heading into that one. But, you know, looking at it, elimination game for Notre Dame, I don't see them, you know, no shot with two losses, especially not having a conference championship to strive for. So it's win or go home for them. On the flip side, Miami, obviously unbeaten. Miami team that I thought was extremely overrated entering last week, but you know, kudos to them. The first time that they're, you know, kind of disrespected. We're depending on, you know, early in the week they were a home underdog. They flipped the favorite, but I thought they showed a little bit of tenacity and something I haven't seen from them all year. They stepped up to the level of competition and took it to Virginia Tech. Notre Dame, a little bit of concerns for the first time all season. I thought the defense had a lack of focus last week, and maybe it's because they were up big, but I got backdoored backing the Irish last week, and I even came out strongly on the show on that one, so I apologize to anyone that tailed me a little bit there, getting backdoored by allowing two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, but that was a little bit concerning, the fact that they gave up 587 yards, but I'll chalk it up as, you know, just them a little bit, you know, coming off two big performances against NC State and USC, and being up big, yeah, maybe they lost a little bit of focus. But, you know, number one factor for me, and let me first say that I did bet Miami early in the week plus 3.5. Again, that's just me taking a hook. It's not, you know, me saying, you know, Miami's one of my top plays of the week. I just thought, you know, for me, I'll take the hook. It's right around a key number. Had Notre Dame been minus 2.5 at the win, I might have laid it with Notre Dame. I think the line currently at 3 is real sharp. For me, I'm going to lean towards the under. I think Miami's defense is the best Notre Dame's seen since the Georgia game, and we saw their offense struggle on that one. And on the flip side, I think Notre Dame's focus is back on the defensive side of the ball, a team that hasn't allowed more than 20 points all season prior to the Wake Forest game. I'm going under 57.5 in a big-time ball game here. That's my current, you know, as far as the best value goes. But let's be honest, it's one of the bigger games of the week. And a lot of times, unless the narrative out there is completely wrong, I usually don't find the tremendous amount of value on the bigger games of the week.
One thing I am kind of curious to see here in this spot is, you know, a lot of people were down on Miami. They had, you know, the close win over Florida State where they basically won it at the buzzer. Same thing against Georgia Tech. You know, they played some really close games here. They had a ton of trouble with a decimated North Carolina team on the road. And then looked like the team that they're supposed to be, the ceiling that they have in that game against Virginia Tech. One of the things that concerns me in a spot like this with a team that's had the body of work that Miami has, to do that 2 weeks in a row, to bring your A game, I hate to use stupid cliches like that, but to bring your max effort back-to-back weeks against teams that are as good or better than you is really hard to do. And that's my concern here with Miami in this game.
Yeah, definitely is. And, you know, it's a young team with Mark Richt, obviously in the second year, and they got a young quarterback. And, you know, their entire linebacker core is a bunch of sophomores. How do they handle the expectations of a big game? Now, you know, Notre Dame had a down season last year, but they've been in a lot of these big games for the last 4 years, particularly on the road ACC. You go back to the Florida State game from years ago, a couple years ago, Clemson on the road in a big, you know, I would trust them more in this spot than what we've seen from Miami. But, you know, I wonder if Miami's upside is a little bit greater than Notre Dame because, you know, maybe they're just finally getting it together being a young team, young program, and we finally saw them break through last week against Virginia Tech. So that's actually a question that I have. Maybe that they finally, you know, they kind of faked it until they made it by getting close wins over Florida State, Georgia Tech, even Syracuse and North Carolina. And then finally the light bulb clicked on for them last week against Virginia Tech. And maybe that's the real team moving forward. But again, I'm not for certain about that. And that's why, you know, I would only bet them at +3.5 and not at the current 3 number. I'm not overwhelmingly, you know, positive as far as, you know, looking at their entire season. To me right now, Virginia Tech looks like an outlier. I just think there's a possibility that the light bulb finally clicked on. Again, another question of why I'm not going to get too involved from this point forward unless the line comes down.
And one more question here about this game, and I don't know if we can necessarily answer this with a one-game sample size, but, you know, Mark Richt, who regularly won 9 or 10 games at Georgia, was dismissed from Georgia largely because he couldn't win that big game. He couldn't put that team in a position to where, you know, they could go to the SEC championship game, to where they could knock off Alabama or LSU or whoever they wound up playing in those spots. This is really his first exceptionally big game at Miami here, I think, just because of the college football playoff implications that are in play as well. So I'm kind of curious to see what sort of steam that narrative draws as we get closer to kickoff.
That's a great point. Means a heck of a lot to Mark Richt here to finally get over the hump, but I also think it means a heck of a lot to Brian Kelly. He hasn't won a big game like this, particularly on the road, since probably the 2012 Oklahoma game. And Oklahoma turned out a little bit to be a fraud by the end of the season, losing a total of three games. So I think both coaches here who have struggled in big-time games, one's really going to move forward with a lot of positive momentum. The other, the questions are going to remain. But, you know, I think Mark Richt probably gets a little bit of a flyer here, the fact that it's only his second year and there's tremendous amount of energy down there in South Florida with this program. So as long as he's not getting crushed in this game, I don't know if it necessarily, you know, is a negative moving forward. For Brian Kelly in his 8th season at Notre Dame, if he can't win this one, especially being favored, then the question definitely becomes, is he ever going to get Notre Dame over the hill as far as being a legitimate national title contender year in and year out?
All right, one more game I want to touch on with you here for college, and we'll talk NFL for a few minutes. And this game is effectively handicapping 101 in terms of, this is probably the most basic handicap you're going to find, at least on the surface. And then as you start digging a little bit deeper into the material, you find that this one has more complexity to it than you originally thought. Game 185-186, Iowa takes on Wisconsin. Iowa opened a 13.5-point favorite. It's moved down to the 11.5 or 12 range. None of those numbers all that significant. But a lot of people look at this game and say, okay, Iowa beat Ohio State. They didn't just beat Ohio State last week. They hammered Ohio State last week. Wisconsin now looks like the Big Ten's best hope to make it into the college football playoff, if not the only hope that the conference has. But they've played virtually nobody to this point in the year. Is this the right line move on this game?
Yeah, I do think so. And Iowa's consistently played up to these ranked teams last 4 seasons, 8-2 against the spread. They've beaten against AP top 25 teams, and they've beaten the closing spread by an average of 2 touchdowns per game. And look, if you're worried, hey, they're going to have a letdown spot, you know, last year they beat number 2 Michigan at home, and the next week shut out Illinois 28-0, and right after that, you know, hammered Nebraska. So they kind of used that win over Michigan to finish their regular season very strong. Wisconsin hasn't played anybody yet. Maybe Northwestern's the only conference team they faced with a winning record, and that game they didn't cover. So I think it's the correct line move, but I'll be honest with you, Adam. Something kind of, and this, even a game we're not talking about, Ohio State, Michigan State, something just doesn't smell right to me. It kind of seems like, you know, those two dogs, Iowa and Michigan State, are almost popular public underdogs, and that's something that I never want to fully jump in on. everything makes sense from a numbers aspect, the fact that those two teams look and appear to be the right side. But, you know, Wisconsin's kind of been meandering, and you can say, hey, they haven't played anybody yet, but they also, you know, are really fresh and focused, and maybe they're capable of really putting it on an Iowa team here. So I'm not going to get too involved. I do think the Iowa is a preferred side, obviously getting more than 10. I would lean that way. But believe it or not, I'm not going to get too involved. I'm a little concerned that Iowa, we'll see how they handle expectations off a 50-point cover. Anytime a team covers by 50 points, I usually like to fade them the next week. It's just that their upside, especially against ranked opponents, has been so overwhelmingly strong. They just play up to the level of their competition.
I know we talked about a few games that you have some opinions on. Before we transition over to the NFL side, are there any games out there that you want to throw out as an exclusive free pick for our listeners?
Yeah, I love Duke this week. I love the situation. I love their matchup against the option. If you're playing the option, first thing I want to know is, do you have experience defending the option? Well, Duke has that experience. You look at them against Georgia Tech, Navy, and Army the last 3 years. They're 6-0 against the spread against option teams. Last year, Duke held Army to their second lowest rush yards of the season. And then you look at motivation here. Duke desperate, 4-5. They got to get the bowl eligibility. They're off 5 straight losses. And they have extra time to prep. They're coming off a bye week to prep for the option. On the flip side, Army's off their biggest win over Air Force in probably 2-plus decades. They shut them out 21-0. Duke is great in non-conference action as far as a technical aspect. They're 18-4 against the spread versus non-conference opponents. We got the matchup here, Duke against the option situation. They're off a bye, Army off a big win. Technical in our favor. Duke Blue Devils, best bet for me, -3.
I like it. I like that a lot. Very strong case there. My number was a decent amount higher in that game as well. So, you know, that one at 1.5 looked like a good power ratings. Talk about all the situational elements and all the other things that are going in our favor. And I think it's a good one there for our listeners. So let's go over to the NFL side here for a couple of minutes. And before we look at some specific games here, Brad, I want to touch on this with you. This has to have been a frustrating couple of weeks for you in the NFL, because favorites are doing very well, and it feels like all the trendy dogs are the dogs that are actually covering.
Yeah, it's been the last couple of weeks a little bit frustrating. There's no doubt about that, particularly last week. If the public's doing well in the NFL, that usually means Brad Power's not doing well. I'm very, more than any other sport, I'm contrarian when it comes to the NFL, because it's the most bet sport, and I tend to find value being contrarian, whether it's fading a popular public underdog or fading that, you know, ever popular favorite here. And also, you know, the old backdoor cover doesn't help old Brad Power sports when you got Tennessee in hand last week as a top play of the week and you know, a touchdown with less than a minute left or even a missed extra point early in the game kind of cost you in that one. So last week was not one of my favorite weeks as far as the NFL goes. There's no doubt about that. But more often than not, when the dust settles, I think if you're a contrarian in the NFL, you can win consistently year after year.
Couple of games I want to talk about with you here, and the first one is the Packers and the Bears. And, you know, what's fascinating about this game is in the lines that came out at CG Technology when they released all the games for the first 16 weeks of the season, this number was Packers -6.5. Now this week, this number is Bears -6. And, look, I get it. Aaron Rodgers is out, and obviously he's a significant adjustment to the line. But the Packers have looked so bad without him. Then all of a sudden, you have this Bears team with Mitch Trubisky and an offense that can't really do a whole lot as a 5.5, 6-point favorite. It's just amazing how quickly things can adjust.
It is. And not only that, but you look at the past history here. I mean, this is the first time Chicago's been a favorite over Green Bay since 2008. I mean, 18 meetings, this is the first time they've been favored here. And Green Bay earlier this year won 35-14. Now, a lot of it had to do with 4 Chicago turnovers. Obviously, Rodgers out since then. Chicago's moved to Mitch Trubisky. But I think the situation favors Chicago here. They're off a bye. Green Bay's traveling on a short week. That was a pathetic, feeble performance against Detroit. I mean, they're off a bye. They get Detroit at home. They got an extra week to prep with Hundley, a quarterback. And you put that kind of effort out there on national television, and what a joke that was. And look, the Bears have been, you know, kind of poor favorites under John Fox, 0-5 straight up and 0-5 against the spread. But this team has a little bit of a different feel. They're 4-0 against the spread at home this year, and I can make the case that they could have won all those games outright against playoff teams. The Atlanta game, they drop a touchdown pass. They beat Pittsburgh outright. They beat Carolina outright, even though they benefited from a couple of defensive touchdowns. The Minnesota game was close. Look, I'm not going to have a strong play of the week on Chicago laying less than a touchdown here, but, you know, this is one earlier in the week I wasn't thinking about too strongly, but after that Green Bay performance, and the more I think about it, I mean, Brett Hundley is just not an NFL quarterback. Give me the Bears here minus the points, believe it or not. I think they're clearly the right side.
Yeah, and you also have this injury situation for Green Bay. Bulaga's out for the year now. They've had multiple guys in the back seven on defense run into injury problems as well. And one of the things that's hard about this game, though, is that you look at the total of 38, you look at the spread of 5.5 or 6, and I think you got to start asking yourself, how many points do I actually need Chicago to score to cover this game? Honestly, if they get 17, 20, it's very difficult to see them not covering this number because their defense has been really, really good here. Vic Fangio is doing some great work here in his third year. You've got this Green Bay offense that just can't do anything right now. They're very one-dimensional running the football. But mentally, and this is something that's really hard about the NFL in general, mentally you have to get over that hurdle of looking at Chicago at 3-5 with, what, 134 points scored in 8 games? You have to get over that mental hurdle of laying 6 with them because sometimes it just makes sense. And that's not to say I'm going to use it for the Super Contest or anything like that, but really there's only one way you can go in this game.
And it's Chicago or nothing. If you don't want to lay 6, I understand. But I'll be honest with you, you do not want Green Bay right now. I think it's a toxic situation. You mentioned the injury to Bulaga, the tackle, and I think a lot of the players that are playing hurt might end up being, you know, injured all of a sudden because I don't think there's much to play for. And all of a sudden, you know, Green Bay there. I mean, what's the atmosphere there? When you're not winning in Green Bay, is that the place that you're really happy to be in the winter? When you got Aaron Rodgers under center, then everything's well. You're winning and everyone's happy there in Packerland. But when you're losing and there's no hope, boy, that could be a long next 6-7 weeks there up there in the frozen tundra. To me, I just cannot – you cannot talk me into having a Green Bay ticket after that Detroit performance. That was one of the worst performances I've seen all year from a team.
Now, I don't want to go down a massive rabbit hole here, but I do want to ask you about this because it just came to me, and I'm sure I'll forget by next week to ask you. You've got this Green Bay team that's 4-4 now. They're 2 games back in the division. They're, you know, a game or so back in the wild card, but obviously their situation is very dire without Aaron Rodgers. But that is a team that has experienced success, knows what it's like to go to the playoffs and to win in the playoffs. You also have one in the AFC here in the Denver Broncos who are now 3-5. They haven't won a game on the road. They have all these quarterback issues. They're talking about going with Paxton Lynch the second he's able to play, which, you know, kind of illustrates the problems that they're having. But we talked about it from a college football standpoint in terms of teams that can no longer make a bowl game. At what point do you start selling some of these NFL teams that have had success, have gone to the playoffs, and their prospects look pretty grim?
Yeah, I mean, look, you would like to think that they're pros. They're getting paid millions of dollars, and you would like to think that they give 100% effort. And I do. Look, for anyone that says that the pros aren't giving 100% effort, if you're not giving 100% effort, you get hurt. The game is so fast, and if you're not, you know, playing 100%, then I think there's a good chance that you get hurt. Now, where I don't think, you know, as far as, you know, the 100% factor, as far as motivation and all that, is the preparation heading into the week. That sometimes can be questionable, or maybe you're just not fully paying attention in your team meetings. Maybe you don't have full focus out there on the practice field. And I got to think, if Denver gets rolled up in a big spot at home on Sunday Night Football against New England, I think the possibility is definitely out there. Boy, if they move to 3-6 with 5 straight losses, 5 straight non-covers, I did, even with one of the better defenses in the National Football League, I'm not going to have too many Denver Bronco tickets on my card, particularly you look at the last 6 weeks where they have 4 road games out of the last 6. You know, to me, I'm not afraid to do it even in the professional leagues to start fading a team because, you know, with a first-year coach, it'll be very interesting to see how they handle it. And I think as far as the markets – will be against them. And I think, you know, if you're just thinking at it logically, I don't think there's much hope for Denver if they don't put forth a good performance here against the Pats on Sunday.
One more game I want to touch on with you here, Brad. And here's one where we're going to have 2 very motivated teams with good efforts coming here. Game 263, 264 on the board. The New Orleans Saints take on the Buffalo Bills. This number is 3 with extra juice or 2.5 out there with extra juice on New Orleans. So it's all about shopping around here for the best price that you can find if you're invested in this game. But, Brad, like I said, these are two teams with a lot to play for here this week. Saints currently lead the NFC South by a half game. Bills, they're a game behind the Patriots, but they're right there in the thick of the wild card race, and it certainly looks like teams like Baltimore, teams like Miami, you know, maybe even the Oakland Raiders could have some issues here going forward. So this is a really significant game, and I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, actually, I'm not a fan of the Bills because I think they benefited from being, you know, one of the best turnover teams in the NFL so far this season. So, you know, moving forward on a game-by-game basis, I'm not going to be on the Bills too much, but I do like the spot here. Look, the Saints deserve to get some respect. They won 6 straight games, all by 8 points or more. Dominated Tampa Bay last week in a 20-point win, only allowed about 200 yards on the defensive side of the ball. But you start looking at, hey, who have they played in this dominating stretch, especially a quarterback? You know, Jay Cutler, Brett Hundley, Mitch Trubisky, banged up Jameis Winston. Now, look, you know, Tyrod Taylor isn't great, and he's not my favorite quarterback. But I'd take him over all those guys, particularly a banged-up Jameis, less than 100% Jameis Winston. And Buffalo's upset on the road at the Jets. They got extra time to prep. They're 7-0-1 against the spread versus the NFC. They're 11-4 against the spread as a home dog. And, look, it's mid-November. The temperature doesn't look too bad, but it's still mid-November in Buffalo, and things can change in a heartbeat there off the shores of Lake Erie. You know that fully well, being there in Cleveland. New Orleans, you know, obviously a dome team that, you know, past history says doesn't play well out in the cold and that. I like the Bills, and they're one of my top 3 or 4 picks as far as this week, particularly if you're getting that full field goal. Really like the Bills a lot in this one.
I like it. You're doing that whole contrarian thing again because, you know, New Orleans is probably going to be the public side here in this spot because I think, you know, I like that you prefaced it by saying that, you know, Buffalo does look like a little bit of a paper tiger. They have done very well in the turnover department. They've done well in the luck and variance departments. And so they can be a tough team to take. But also, you know, a lot of times the NFL is about those situations. The NFL is about going against those perceptions. And I imagine that there are a lot of people out there that look at New Orleans winning 6 in a row, as you said, all by more than a touchdown. And they're asking themselves, why is this game only 3? Or why is this game 2.5? Generally speaking, at that point in the NFL, you take the other side because there's a reason it's 2.5 or 3.
Oh yeah, them books out there that are still dealing, you know, 2.5. To me, they're wanting that New Orleans money there. And look, I think they're kind of setting it up a little bit. But we've seen now. Look, they probably had an overwhelming amount of the 2.5. That's why we've seen some books go to the 3 even money there, maybe to get a little bit more action from the Buffalo side, but. Yeah, definitely New Orleans is going to be the public side here. And again, after the public's done all right the last couple of weeks, I'm telling you that does not last long in the NFL, especially, you know, the reason they're not building new hotels or at least showing profits here from the book side in Vegas. This might be a good week to be very anti-public and contrarian here this particular upcoming week.
Well, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. What's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, right now. We talk about it each and every week, and I think we have a really good price point out there as far as the Powers Picks newsletter. If you want to get involved, whether you bet a lot or not, but if you just want to understand the entire betting market, the Powers Picks newsletter gets emailed to you each and every Wednesday. It includes, you know, misleading finals from the week before, bad beats, major injuries. You know, we look at the overall records and stuff, trends. Also, detail, and probably most importantly, detailed write-ups and picks on every single college football game. It doesn't matter if it's the Crimson Tide or the Jaguars from South Alabama. You get a full game write-up on every single game. Also, the NFL, power ratings, you name it, it's in there. It's $49, not for this week, not for this month, but for the rest of the season, postseason, all the way through the Super Bowl. $49, BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, like I said, our listeners don't know that you and I had about a good 20 minutes of a previous recording done here. Had to start things over from scratch. So, man, I really do appreciate your patience with me today. Thank you so much for that, and I'll talk to you again next week, bud.
Hey, sounds good. Appreciate you, man. I look forward to talking to you next week. Take care.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. And again, that Powers Picks newsletter, Great publication. I know he's posted some free editions of that before to check out. So, you know, really good stuff there from him. And again, thanks so much to him for what was a very frustrating start to the morning. So we had started the show. We had gotten about 20 minutes in. And, of course, some of you may have that. I don't know if some of the sites that pick up the RSS feed that we have, you know, were able to hop on that shortened edition of the show or not. I tried to delete it right away as quickly as I could. But, yeah, we ran into a situation where the show just completely cut out, just completely stopped recording. He couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear him. I didn't know if our listeners were hearing us that were listening live. So we just scrapped it, started over, and I certainly appreciate him for that. So, you know, he wound up doing more than an hour here, even though you only heard about 40 minutes of it. So thank you so much to him. And you know, thanks to all of our guests that join me every week here and give their time and give their analysis to the show to help out all of our listeners and also to help me out too. I mean, I like to think I've got a pretty good grasp here of the markets and of handicapping these games and breaking this stuff down, but it doesn't hurt to be able to have the friends and colleagues that I do here in this industry that I can bounce ideas off of, you know, and chat with them. So, you know, thanks to Brad and thanks to all of our guests that joined me here on Bang the Book Radio. Hopefully Rolf Michaels will join us here. I don't know if the show screwing up kind of altered his timeline a little bit here for today's show. That certainly is a possibility, but I would like to talk some college basketball with him as that season starts up tomorrow night. Now, for college basketball, I'll just go ahead and give you some of my thoughts here, and we'll wait and see if Rolf makes it onto the program. But college basketball is a big-time challenge because you just have so many teams you have to consider. There's so much turnover year after year. And also, you know, when it comes to football, you know what a lot of these teams, you know what a lot of these coaches are going to do. And when you have coaches that elevate from the small conferences to the mid-majors to maybe the marquee blue-chip types of programs, it's tough for me because I don't know what those guys like to run. I don't know if they have the personnel to do it. You know, you see some massive pace changes in college basketball from year to year where you'll have a team that goes from running to a team that wants to slow the game down. Well, if they don't have a good defense or they don't have an efficient offense, you know, slowing the game down doesn't really help them a whole lot. They're better off playing that high variance, high possession game. So in a lot of instances, you know, with those new teams, or not those new teams, but those new head coaches, I don't really know what to expect from them. So for college basketball, I definitely sit and wait around. I don't get involved much with college basketball until generally January or February. You know, once football season, once college football season is done, when the NFL's in the playoffs and we only have a few games to talk about week after week, that's when I really start to look at college basketball. Because at that point, you'll know what some of the rotations are. You'll know where underclassmen are playing. You know, you'll know if the upperclassmen are able to carry these programs. And of course, also this year, all the stuff with the coaches and the scandals and the sanctions and all that type of stuff, it just seems like a challenging year for college basketball. Now, that being said, I understand the people that want to jump in right away because early season college basketball is probably the most inefficient early season market because you just have so many spots where, you know, the odds makers are throwing up numbers. They're guessing along with most of the people that are out there. But if you've got those edges, if you've done your preseason prep work, if you know who's back, coaching changes, things of that sort, if you know who's a good fit for a certain program, you can probably take advantage of those situations. So I think that early season college basketball does yield a lot of opportunity for profit. But the problem is I don't feel like I'm equipped. I don't feel like I'm ready to dive into it. So we will talk about it here on the show as time permits, and we'll definitely talk about it with people like Rolf and with people like Kyle Hunter. But you know, in this industry, it's all about football. It always has been. It always will be. So that will be our primary focus. That is our cash cow here in this industry. And at this time of the year, after college football and the NFL, you probably go down to the NBA. So we'll try to touch a little bit more on some NBA things as we go along. But college basketball standpoint, it's out there. There are opportunities to make money. But we even talked about it with Wes Reynolds on yesterday's show in that, you know, you have rule changes, you have these officiating standards, you have all these things at the start of the year that may help some teams and may hurt some teams. So you know, you really have to take a look at the entire total package of situations in college basketball. And with so many teams, it's very hard to do that. So I would either, you know, defer to the experts, which we're going to do here in a second with Rolf Michaels, you know, or just limit your exposure quite a bit there with college basketball until we start to get a greater feel for it. One more guest here on this Thursday edition of the show. That is Mr. Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thank you. Certainly excited. College hoops starting tomorrow. Best time of the year.
All right. Well, before we get into any sort of in-depth college basketball analysis, I do want to make sure that we throw this out there at the top of the show. I know you sent me over some emails here over the last couple of days. You've got some excellent college basketball resources over at WagerTalk.com.
Well, you know, it's when we get into the other sports, power ratings are easy to find. When you get into college basketball with 351 teams, they're a little harder. College basketball is my favorite sport. I did take the time. I released a in a one pamphlet form. You could get returning starters, my power ratings, and my rank for all 351 teams. It's at WagerTalk.com. Go to news and then college basketball, and you'll become a mini expert in just a minute with over 60 games tipping off on Friday.
All right. Now, one of the things I did want to talk about with you here, and I certainly recommend, I scanned through all the documents that you've sent over, and there's some really tremendous stuff in there. But just as kind of a Cliff Notes version for our listeners here for the show, and then, of course, they can go to wagertalk.com and check it out a little bit more in depth. Give us a few nuggets on some teams here early on in the season. Are there some teams that you really like that you're going to look for spots to play? Some teams that you don't like where you're going to look for spots to fade, maybe take advantage of some overvalued teams out there? Give us something, man. Give us a little bit of a nibble of the carrot there.
Well, you know, the most important thing, obviously, is returning starters. You know, there are, unlike college football, where you're never going to have zero or rarely 22 returning starters, there are a handful of teams that return either zero or five starters. You know, number one, that's the key. Make sure you know the teams you're betting on. This year, there are 26 of the 351 teams that return all five starters, and there are 10 teams that have no returning starters back for this year. Also, you want to look at those new head coaches. There are 48 teams that have new head coaches this year of the 351, and let's just get out a couple changes. Three teams changed conferences this year. Wichita State moved from the Missouri Valley to the American. Valpo filled their spot in the Missouri Valley as they left the Horizon. And then IUPUI, Indiana University of Purdue, moved up to the Horizon. So those are the changes. So when I look at the teams that have five returning starters back, you know, while Wichita State is ranked in the top 10 in the AP and the coaches poll, I have them as my number one team this year. They're a team I'm going to play to win the NCAA tournament. You know, we saw Butler and Gonzaga get there the last couple years. I think Wichita State is very capable of winning that. You know, another team with five returning starters that I'll look to play on early is TCU. Jamie Dixon now, you know, he did a great job at Pittsburgh. He's moved over to TCU with five returning starters. Again, another team. And someone else from the Big Ten that's just they made my 25th best team this year. We've seen incredible improvement as Minnesota, five returning starters. Richard Petrino, you know, is their head coach, obviously Petrino's son. Now, when we're looking at teams that perhaps are a little bit not in that same range of top 25 teams that I look to play on, there's two to come in mind that don't have the number of returning starters, but they have incredible transfers this year. Being, you know, in Las Vegas, I follow the Mountain West very close. Nevada is a team that has three transfers this year. They have the dual brothers, the dual twins that were at NC State a couple years ago, and then one more transfer. Nevada is a team in the Mountain West that I will look to play on. Georgia and Providence are two other teams that fall into my category of things I look for early in the year. Georgia is a team that has a player that would have been a lottery player, got injured, now he's back. Providence is a team that lost a pair of NBA players 2 years ago, didn't expect them to play as good as they did. They bonded well last year, and now another step forward. So in a gut shot, you know, those are the teams that pop out into my head in a quick instance.
I like the Wichita State future. That's the one that I'm going to focus on a little bit here. And I think you brought up great points about other teams. And Nevada's a team that's already been kind of on an upswing to begin with. So for them to improve even more, I think is something very notable. But for Wichita State, you know, it seems like year after year we talk about this. They get screwed by the selection committee every single time. They wind up drawing some ridiculously hard bracket, or they're underseeded. Now that they make that move to the American and they play some good teams like an SMU, like a Cincinnati, you know, that should help them come tournament time in terms of getting a better draw as well. So I think that there's some more credence to playing a future on them.
Now, one thing I also want to mention with Wichita is that I'm going to bet a future, but they may not be a team I'm going to play on much in December and January. It's very difficult moving to a new conference and having to prep for all those teams. When you're preparing in the off season for college basketball, you prepare for the same opponents year in and year out. This is a big conference move for them to be to going to these new venues, to playing these tough road games against new opponents, having to prep for a brand new schedule. So even if they have a couple losses along the way, I think that just sets them up even better to prepare when we get into March Madness. So while they may have a few more losses, I think they're the most talented team. It may not show record-wise, but even with those losses, I'm going to be playing on them when we get to March.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think anytime they're on the road is a big favorite. Playing in an unfamiliar destination or playing back-to-back road games, you know, in a couple of places that they've never been before, because there is a high perception of this team, and they will be power rated highly. They will be favored by big numbers on the road against some of the middle and bottom tier teams there in the AAC. So I think that's a really excellent point that you made there. What about the other side? You talked about some teams that you've got high hopes for this season, some teams you may be looking to back here. What about some teams that you're looking to maybe capitalize on going against?
Well, you know, I'm not a fan of Miami of Florida. They're ranked right now 12 and 13th. I think they're going to struggle with the few guys they lost this year. And returning starters doesn't always translate into the success you're going to have back. You know, they lost while they have their point guard back, which is very important to me. They lose both a guard and a forward that were like they're all can do it guys. You know, they had a 6'6" guard that could guard anybody. He got assists and he got rebounds. They lost a forward that can do both score and rebound. So I think I have my Miami down a few notches. You know, let me just jump down to two teams that you have to look to play against early. There are only two teams of the 351 in college basketball that return zero starters and have a new head coach. It's Austin Peay, and Chattanooga. So right away, I mean, make sure you have those two guys circled. If you're going to play on them, make sure you have a damn good reason to do so. Out of the 351 teams, I have them power rated. Chattanooga, my number 250 team. Then Peay is 313. I'm going to shoot out seven more teams that return only one starter and also have a new head coach. Some of these teams are going to be much more familiar. We have Dayton, Virginia Commonwealth, NC Wilmington, California, Rice, Akron, and Grambling. Again, those teams return only one starter and have a new head coach. My highest-ranked team among them is VCU. Again, VCU's been a staple in tournament for year in and year out. But now having lost another head coach, you know, you lose Shaka Smart to Texas a few years ago. Now you have a new coach for 2 years. You lose him to LSU. Mike Rhodes is moving in. And again, with one starter back, VCU I have as my number 82 team. They're the highest among the nine teams that have a new head coach and return zero or one starter back.
Dayton's a really interesting team because that's a team that has had the upside to go out there and beat some very, very big names, make some tournament runs. And obviously Archie Miller was one hell of a head coach. So they're going to be one to watch because, you run into a situation with the Flyers where they don't always have the greatest talent, but Miller maximized every player that he had there, it felt like. And maybe now you lose some of that dynamic. So I like that list of teams that you talked about. And Ralph, I guess I'll ask you one more thing here as we head into the first weekend, I should say, of college basketball. specifically for you, is the beginning of the year the best time to get value?
Well, it is. I think so, because a lot of times you're getting those teams that aren't normally lined, and if you follow them, you really can get a grasp of how teams have played. You know, one of the most important things I look to in November are the teams that took the overseas trips in the summer. It is absolutely the most important strategy for me handicapping in November. Year in and year out, those teams that take the overseas exhibition trips, get all those extra practices in, have all that extra bonding time, traditionally start off great. And, you know, if there's a deciding factor, if I'm going to look at one thing early in November, it's going to be playing on those teams. You know, granted, as long as everyone is healthy and they're making the improvement you would want, you know, having a multi-year head coach, having multiple starters back, it is a completely underrated situation that I don't think the novice looks at. But take a look, go back and read what they did. If you look at the game notes from the teams, you'll always discover who it was. But, you know, a valuable resource now is actually just going to the college sites and looking at their quick facts or pulling up the game notes for these week ones. You know, in one glance, you're going to know, reading that first page or the first two pages, exactly who's available and who's not.
One last question, because I asked this question yesterday to one of the guests that I had, and we couldn't really figure too much out. But, you know, I know that the change to the shot clock obviously was a very significant thing, and we saw totals numbers moving around and people trying to figure out what impact that was going to have. Are there any rule changes in college basketball this year that you think will have significant betting impact?
There's none that come to mind for me. I don't know of any that popped off that are going to change the way the game's being played. If I missed one, I apologize. But nothing as dynamic as the shot clock change.
All right, we'll move over to the college football side here. We will try to talk college basketball with Rolf every week. As he said, it's his favorite sport, and I really like the way that he approaches it. I love the way that he handicaps it. So we'll be able to touch on some more things with him here as we go throughout the college basketball season. But I want to ask you about college football here, and this is something I talked about with Brad in the previous segment and with my guests here over the last couple of days, Rolf, is in November, situational elements just have a lot more impact in college football than they have over the first 2 months of the year.
Well, they do, and, you know, situations, and let's emphasize that by saying rivalries. You know, the rivalry factor cannot be overlooked, and I think it's worth sometimes up to 4, 5, and 6 points. You know, I'm always one to look, when I'm looking at situational handicapping, you know, looking at the bubble burst. We saw, you know, a great bubble burst effect with Penn State this past week. You know, losing to Ohio State, then losing to Michigan State. You know, does that hold true with Oklahoma State this week? We'll see. You know, they had the bubble burst. But when you're winning those rivalry games and you have emotional games, we saw the same thing with Ohio State going down to Iowa, playing that emotional Penn State come-from-behind game and now having, you know, when they travel to Iowa. So situations definitely become more of a factor. And I think back-to-backs are even more important for those teams that have played 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks in a row. You know, there's some teams that don't have a bye that are going to play 12 straight weeks, and there's other conferences that have multiple byes. If you have a matchup with a team off a bye or 1 week fresh off a bye compared to a team that's played 7, 8, or 9 straight weeks, you get into November and you have all these injuries and nicked up players and people playing out of position. It's something you absolutely have to look in week in and week out. And, you know, while it's probably the most obvious when you're looking at size and totals when you get to November, a lot of times it sneaks up to us when we have that first huge bad week of weather. Oh, I should have looked at weather more. You can't play a game on the East Coast now or in the, you know, in the Mountain West without looking at that weather. Not only temperature doesn't make that much of a factor. It's the wind that's going to cause a team to change the way they play offense and shut down a passing game without even needing a good defense to do so.
So that's kind of an angle I'm sort of wondering about, and I can't think of a game off the top of my head that I'm looking at here right now on the card, but you do run into situations, let's say in Conference USA or the AAC or something like that, where you've got one of these Texas teams that has to go and play in West Virginia against Marshall, or, you know, maybe it's snowy a little bit or cold in Western Kentucky, something like that. Is that a factor for you in terms of a motivational element? Like, if a team that has nothing to play for has to take this long road trip and the weather also happens to be bad, I mean, is that almost an autoplay for you where you just expect that team not to show up?
Well, not an autoplay. I mean, obviously, it's going to be part of it. But if you're leading with that team, yes, it's absolutely a big factor. You know, a lot of it is in the American when you have the Florida teams going up north. You know, we see it time and time and again. When it gets cold for those Florida kids, you know, it can be cold. So you got to look at the Florida Atlantics and the Internationals and CUSA when they make a trip up to Marshall. You have to look at UCF and USF when they make those trips. And, you know, those are the two biggest conferences that I focus on when you have the Florida teams making the trips. So, you know, it's different. It's different when you have cold wind than you just have wind. Cold wind can gnaw on teams. And, again, if it's a team that is normally high-paced, wants to throw the ball, you know, you look to fade them. But a team that can run the ball as well, you know, you have a dual threat team, so you're not automatically going to play against a team that can pass the ball if they have the capabilities to play the ball, because both teams have to play in that wind no matter what.
All right, let's look at a couple of games here for Week 11, and let's go to the Big 12 and talk about game 157-158. West Virginia takes on Kansas State. West Virginia with a win over Iowa State last week. The Mountaineers took out a bunch of steam. That steam wound up being right in terms of picking the winner for that game, as West Virginia knocked off Iowa State. Now they go to Manhattan, and it's really difficult for West Virginia here. I think the Big 12, while I understand why they're there, and I think it was a better fit for them than the Big East or a better fit than the ACC would be, it's still a challenging thing for them to go out and play these road games. The trade-off is they have a very good home field advantage there in Morgantown. But this looks like one. I know the number is only 2.5, and I've not been high on Kansas State all year. This one looks like it's fairly easy, and generally speaking, that scares me. But this spot looks to scream Kansas State to me.
Well, the issue is that Jesse Ertz probably will not play. Alex Delton, their number two quarterback, will probably not play. And Skylar Thompson, a true freshman who has 16 pass attempts on the year, may very well get to start this week. So Bill Snyder has been very coy, saying he doesn't know which of the three quarterbacks will play, but it looks like it is going to be the true frost, Skylar Thompson. So that takes me off this game. But when I look at West Virginia, you know, they have a huge difference with their home-road dichotomy, especially on defense. You know, at home, They held Iowa State to 350 yards and 16 points, solid performance. You know, and they held Texas Tech to 35 points. They gave up a lot of yards. But when you go on the road, they went to Kansas, and they gave up 564 yards to a Kansas team, including 367 yards rushing. Then they went to Baylor. They allowed 36 points to a Baylor team, which isn't the Baylor team of a few years ago, and they allowed 497 yards and 30 first downs to Baylor. So when West Virginia gets on the road, they had six defensive starters missing last week against Iowa State. At least four of them are going to be out this week. Kansas State is a team that can run the ball. This is a game where, because of the quarterback situation in Kansas State, I'm not going to play the side, but this is one where I certainly do like the total with a running team that can have success, and West Virginia wanting to run the ball against a very good rush defense of Kansas State. I'm going to look to play the under in this one.
It's interesting to me that this number is only 2.5 with that questionable quarterback situation for Kansas State. And it sort of feels to me like if the books were worried about it, they'd probably have it off the board or have it maybe just sitting there on three. But the fact that it's at 2.5 right now, I don't know if that's maybe reading between the lines that Ertz might be able to go, or maybe that Ertz isn't able to go, and this number would be higher than a field goal if he was. It's strange to see it out there on the board with a situation like that where, I mean, if you look at Kansas State over the last couple of years, Jesse Ertz has basically been that entire offense.
Well, he has, but this year, you know, it hasn't been that same. I mean, Ertz has 100 attempts on the year, and he's completing 55%. His backup, Alex Delton, has 75 attempts. He has a better percentage at 56%, and Delton has more yards rushing, 342 yards rushing, compared to Ertz at 336. So the difference with these three quarterbacks is that they're identical system-wide. You know, you don't have a passing quarterback and a running quarterback. They all fit into Snyder's system. He recruited them because they fit into a system of being a mobile quarterback. So all three are exactly the same. So you don't have the quarterback indifference as you do where some teams lose their starter and you have a backup who is number one, inexperienced, or number two is a different method quarterback.
All right, one more game I want to touch on here in depth from a college football side of things, and that's Boise State on the road in Fort Collins to take on Colorado State. Almost all the way down the board here, game 217, 218. Boise State opened a 4.5-point favorite, up to 5.5 at DSI, 6 basically everywhere else. All of a sudden, I don't think people have really realized it, but all of a sudden, since that road win over San Diego State, Boise State looks really, really good. On the other side, Colorado State has not looked good. 2-point win over Nevada at home, 1-3 at New Mexico, but New Mexico's falling off quickly. Blown out by Air Force, didn't do anything against Wyoming in the Snow Globe game last week in Laramie. This is an interesting one because Colorado State was pretty much the consensus favorite to win this conference coming into the year. Boise State playing very well. Now all of a sudden Colorado State's getting 6 at home.
Well, you know, it's 6 and I'm actually, I won't, this game won't be on my card, but if I had to play it, I would lay the 6 with this. You know, we know about the bubble burst when an AP top 10 loses. But you can rest assured that there's bubble burst in Colorado State this week. You know, in fact, when I was reading the Denver papers this week, Bobo called this his most painful loss in the last half decade, in the last 5 years, and he said it was clearly the worst loss. The border war is a huge rivalry for Colorado State and Wyoming. Colorado State led that game 13-9 late into the fourth quarter. They allowed a 69-yard touchdown drive by Wyoming. They controlled their own destiny in the Mountain West. They were looking forward to winning that division, and now they lost, and now they're not going to win that division unless Boise and Wyoming do a total collapse. So, you know, bubble burst trickles down into all levels, and we only usually use it for the national championship method. But in this case, you have a very, very disappointed Colorado State team. You know, on the flip side, while Boise is a 5.5 point road favorite this year, last year they were a 28.5 point favorite at home. So you look at while the line has gone up and you think you're getting value on Colorado State, I look at as Boise was a 28.5 point favorite last year, and all they've done this year is lose to Virginia and lose to Washington State. And now they're only laying 5.5 to Colorado State, to a team that has is on a 4-game ATS losing streak, and you have by far the better team. I mean, Boise is Boise. You know what you're going to get. They have now clinched their 20th straight winning season. That's the third best in college football, trailing only Virginia Tech and Florida State. You have a disappointed Colorado State off a bubble burst. And again, value from where the line was last year relative to this year, and because of the way the season has played out, I think you're getting value with Boise.
That is an excellent point about Colorado State. I'm glad you brought that up, and I was hoping that you would, because I think that's something worth talking about here as well, is that for these group of five schools, it's about winning your conference. It's about winning your division and getting a chance to play for that conference championship, because – you're going to a bowl game, and that's all well and good, but when you're a group of five school and you go to a bowl game, you're going to one of those early bowl games, you know, in a spot that you may or may not want to go. You want that conference title. You want that hardware. You know, you're not going to play in the college football playoff. You're not going to play in a New Year's Six bowl game unless you're, you know, a significant outlier. So you know, that's what it's about. It's not about getting that 13th game to go and play in a bowl. It's about winning your conference, and I'm glad you brought that point up, and I think that's something that, you know, is a meaningful betting angle here over the last 3-4 weeks of the regular season.
Yeah, disappointments. Every team has positive games and disappointing games, and to Colorado State. I mean, Colorado State, Wyoming is no different than Ohio State, Michigan. If you go to that school, the border war is the border war. So, you know, the same type of feelings, especially off a disappointing loss. Losing one thing, you know, losing a couple starters and losing by 21 points is one type of disappointment. Losing with 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter after having the lead, after thinking you're going to beat this team, is a different type of disappointment.
All right, let's move over to the NFL side here for a few minutes and chat about some games with the professionals. And I guess before we do that, I want to ask you this question here because, you know, I know that you and Brad Powers trade notes a lot, and I know that he's got a very distinct NFL handicapping style, in which case he's generally against the market. He wants to be against the public, wants to be very contrarian. Hasn't worked out for him the last few weeks because favorites and trendy dogs have been the flavors of the week. How have things gone for you in the NFL? I mean, is everything going your way, or have you also fallen victim to that a little bit?
Actually, I've had one of my best NFL seasons. And, you know, I made a switch this year, and I think we've talked about it earlier on the show. I think that, you know, while the NFL is always called the league of parity, and usually it is, I think we've seen some teams become really bad the last few years. I mean, we talked about it last week at the eye test. You know, we talked about the Rams going to the Giants. One team playing good, one team playing bad. Don't try to overanalyze it. The NFL is a league of, you know, when the teams are playing up to what you expect of them, it's been playing out this year. That's the difference. We haven't had the big drop-offs in teams that, or we haven't had those teams that were really bad part of the year that came back. You know, we've seen the Giants are really bad. We've seen the Browns are really bad. We've seen San Francisco's been really bad. And we've seen the teams that are playing well continue to play well. You could throw Denver in that bad category as well, you know, because of their offense. So I think it's been a situation where if a team passes the eye test in the NFL, it's held true this year where you haven't had any big surprises where a team that's been a horrible team has all of a sudden turned it around and played well in one game.
All right, well, let's put that theory to the test here in one of these games. We'll look at game 261, 262. Cincinnati takes on Tennessee. Tennessee opened a 4-point favorite, up to 4.5, Bovada at 5. So it looks like the public preferring Tennessee here in this spot. That's not a big surprise. Early in the week, a few sharp guys on them as well. Oh, we'll see more movement on this game as we get closer to kickoff. But are you applying that same theory here because Tennessee's looked so bad or because Cincinnati's looked so bad, excuse me, or are you still worried about Tennessee and their inconsistencies?
Well, you know, while Tennessee's been inconsistent, yes, they've still won games. I mean, they're on a 3-game win streak. They beat Indianapolis by 14. They went into Cleveland. They did struggle on the road, beat the Browns. And then they beat Baltimore. But you look at the situations now. I'm not going to count the Browns game on the road because we're at home now. Marcus Mariota is a far different quarterback at home. He has a 16-3 ratio at home his last 8 games. You know, and at home this year, what did they do? They beat Seattle. They beat Indianapolis by 14. And they beat Baltimore only by 3. But they missed an extra point, and Baltimore scored on one of the last plays of the game, or else they would have covered. So you're looking at their last 3 home games, they've won by, if Baltimore would have not scored that touchdown, they would have won 3 straight games by 10 points per game, and their only other home game was the opener against Oakland, and that wasn't that bad of a loss. They only outgained by 9 yards, and they lost that game. So I'm looking at a Titans team that's on a 6-1-1 run at home, playing a Cincinnati team that, while I'm not sure why A.J. Green wasn't suspended, you saw the frustration. Basically, that was a microcosm of the Bengals season and their frustration. You know, hey, let me tell you what, A.J. Green, it's not the smartest thing to punch helmets. It usually hurts your hand more than it hurts the other guy. But, you know, when you got into the chokehold, and I think that really was a microcosm of what the Bengals have gone through. You know, a 1-point win against Indianapolis, a 4-point win against Buffalo, and a win at Cleveland are their only positive attributes. But, you know, they have the number 32 offense. When you have a number 32 offense going on the road for a second straight road game where you can't correct much, coming off a Jacksonville game where you scored 7 points, had 148 yards, and only 8 first downs, that's a scary proposition. When you have an offense that in the last 3 weeks is averaging 210 yards per game and is averaging 10 first downs per game, that's a team I'm certainly not going to back. So Tennessee with Mariota at home, positive vibes with their ATS, playing great at home, beating Seattle, Indy, and Baltimore their last 3 games against the Bengals in the situation, I will back the Titans.
One other thing I'll ask you about this game in terms of the Titans, and of course they're tied with Jacksonville at 5-3, and right now, you know, the loser of the AFC South would be the wild card. That would be Jacksonville at this point. Does it mean anything to you situationally when, if you're Tennessee and you're looking at the situation here in this division, Andrew Luck's not going to play the rest of the year, which we pretty much already knew, but then Deshaun Watson tears his ACL, he's done for the year. Jacksonville's your only competition. Does that give a team a little bit of an extra boost in the NFL?
I'm sure they talk about it. I mean, you know, the front office and the coaches aren't going to talk about any look ahead. They're only worried about who they're playing this Sunday. But I clearly believe that when you're looking at who your competition is, you're looking at how important each game is because of where you are, that all you really have to do is play above level from here on out. You know, they're road games from here on out. After Cincinnati, they go to Pittsburgh. Then they play Indianapolis, Arizona, and San Francisco. Well, if I'm looking at those four road games, I'm going to say, well, we can at least win two. And anytime you're leading a division, you know you're going to be favored or should win at least 50% of your road games from here on out. You're playing well at home. I think it absolutely gives you a boost midseason to say, you know, the destiny is ours. Let's just not make mistakes. Let's play better. Be responsible for your situations. Don't make dumb errors. And I believe it is a good boost. I think that's a very good point by you. It's something I really haven't thought about in the situation, but talking it through in my head here on the show, I would say absolutely it's a positive. It can't be a negative. Let's put it that way.
One more game I want to touch on with you here, Rolf. Game 271-272, the Giants take on San Francisco. The Giants are up to a 2.5-point favorite with extra juice. So this one may be pushing 3 here soon enough. And we've seen the market speak on this game. And I was kind of wondering, when we did see that, which way the market would go. I think it's pretty telling here that the Giants, who've looked awful, I mean, about as bad as you can, also all the injury problems that they have, they gave up 51 points off a bye last week to the Rams. And the Rams are very good, but you can't give up 51 points off a bye. Now they travel cross-country, and the market likes them. Is the market right, or are they missing something here? What do you think?
Well, I think the market is right because, you know, while you have one team that we talked about last week, how can you play on them because they're playing so poorly? You know, on the flip side, you have a team that is 1-23 straight up their last 24 games. So, you know, the Giants have the capacity to win. They have the talent to win. We know that. Granted, their wide receivers' core is decimated, but the rest of the talent on that team is better than what you get with the 49ers. And now if you look at the Giants' schedule, you know, the Giants this year are 0-4 straight up at home. They lost to the Rams, they lost to the Seattles, they lost to the Chargers, they lost to Detroit. We know that playing in New York at home when you're not playing well is a complete detriment. The fans are on you, the media is on you. You are just riled up because there's so much negativity. Going on the road, I believe, is a relief. They went into Philadelphia, they lost by 3 points, not a bad loss. They went into Tampa Bay, they lost by 2, not a bad loss. Their last road game, they went into Denver. We never thought they would win that game. They beat them 23-10, an easy win. I think getting on the road now is a positive for them. They've only had one road game in their last 4 games. Now getting out of town, you're staying at the hotel, you're doing your team meetings, things are different. You're getting a change up to the routine of losing week in and week out at home. So to me, you know, when you have a 49ers team that's 1-23 straight up and you got a low line, I'm going to look to play against them almost every time. And in this time, by default, I will take the Giants.
Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We talked about the college basketball stuff that you have going on over there. What else is new?
Well, you know, Gridiron Guide as well. It's a college football weekly newsletter. Take a look, and you could flip through it in just a minute. It's one full page per matchup. But take a look at the yards and the turnovers. And at one glance, you could see if a team probably won the way they should have, or if it was a fortunate win. It also has quarter-by-quarter scoring, so you can see what happened late in the fourth quarter. You know, if a team had to come from behind or if a team extended a lead. And if you're betting quarters or halves, it's a great tool for that. But, again, a lot more college basketball information coming up daily. Check it out, Wager Talk News, then college basketball. And we'll be starting a daily college basketball newsletter within the next week or two, which will have a full page for every game on the board every day. So working hard on that. It'll be something exciting, and certainly looking forward to it.
Well, and you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate it. I'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam.
Good stuff there on today's show. And again, thank you to both of my guests here for helping me out when we had a little bit of an issue earlier on in the show, and hopefully everything came through fine with this broadcast. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two segments will wrap up this week: our Westgate Super Contest selection segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. 24-21 coming out of a 4-1 week. I actually like the Week 10 card here. I should have all five of my plays for the Super Contest, at least before we see the injury updates on Friday. So you can look out for that on tomorrow's show. And then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.